Happy Sabbath. Let's begin with a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we ask for your Holy Spirit as we study through this material. Ask a blessing upon the time we spend this Sabbath day together studying. We ask for light, and we trust that you have a message for us, and we ask a blessing at this time in Jesus' name. Amen. This particular study, I have one point that I want to try to make, but it's kind of a new insight, and it's woven into a series that we've started writing. I don't know how much or any if any of it's on the web yet. We're titling this little segment "The Hidden History of Verse 40," and this is I cut and pasted part of the first presentation and the second presentation. There's about five or so of them done right now. And so the point I want to make in this presentation today is a point that's woven into this series of articles. And it's similar to the fact that at 9/11, English law was changed to Roman law, and habeas corpus was set aside. And though that truth becomes part of the characteristics of the waymark of 9/11, and whether people put a great deal of weight upon the significance of the Patriot Act and what it accomplished at 9/11, I don't know. But when you're looking at the hidden history of verse 40 and the line of history that the ceiling time of the 144,000 of 9/11 to the Sunday law, which is part of that hidden history, it's interesting to note that there's a variety of subjects that have several waymarks within that history. For instance, just to be honest, what I mean, 9/11, you have the arrival of the third woe, and then you have the war and literal Israel beginning, and then you're going to have Islam strike the United States again at the Sunday law. So when you've got three steps there that is just dealing with Islam, and there's a variety of prophetic symbols that are that way, and one of them is the Constitution, and one of them that's closely connected to the Constitution is the speaking of the nation, because that's what the primary characteristic of the United States in Bible prophecy is. In Revelation chapter 12, it's the earth that opens its mouth and swallows up the persecution of the dragon power, and that's a reference to the earth beast of Revelation 13, who swallows up the persecution of the papacy and the kings of Europe through the introduction of the Constitution of the United States. And so these various waymarks that are represented by speaking, they have a corresponding line that appears in the history of the ceiling from 9/11 to the Sunday law. And that corresponding line is the Constitution. When you follow the Constitution as a prophetic line and watch the places that it is marked prophetically, it's teaching, it's providing light that is closely connected to the speaking of the United States, the whole story. So that's where we're at in these articles that I've cut and pasted to make my point. And what I'm saying is that I don't know how informed we are to be about constitutional law as Seventh-day Adventists here in the Sunday law crisis that's about to take place. But I often think of A.T. Jones, who was the messenger of Revelation 18 in 1888. Jones and Wagner were identified as such. And he, as an American citizen, went into the Congress and made a presentation against the Blair bills of the 1888 time period. And that infers, at least, that those people that are called into the courts of the land in the Sunday law time period are to have at least a basic understanding of the Constitution, and which is something that probably not many of us are really proficient at. And for me, I wasn't. I never understood the element of due process in the Constitution. And what I've come to discover is that the Pelosi trials of 2022 did with the constitutional concept of due process the same thing that happened at 9/11 with the Patriot Act. And so that's the little nugget that I'm going to try to present today. And I'm taking it, I just cut and pasted part of a couple articles. So there's a lot of other things that we'll touch on as we go through, but I'm going to read through this. And when we get to the part to where we deal with due process, I'll slow down because I'm still not an expert at what I'm saying. I don't know that I can say it without the notes. But I think it's worth understanding that the significance of due process being removed before we get to the Sunday law time period is consistent with Sister White saying every, how does she say it? Every principle of the Constitution will be repudiated. And due process is certainly one of those that gets repudiated along the way. So cutting into this article, it says, the warning message represented by Christ as the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet represents a warning to flee in advance of the destruction and scattering that is to follow. The year 66, the Roman general Cestius fulfilled that warning to the Christians of the era of pagan Rome. In the first century, the Apostle Paul recorded the same warning for the Christians that would suffer during the era of papal Rome. The warning for Sabbath keepers to move out of the cities and live in the country came in 1888, the same year as the Blair Bill, the first attempt to establish Sunday as a national day of rest. The Blair Bill was the warning to flee in fulfillment of Christ's reference of Daniel's abomination of desolation. Before I read on, I want to throw just some context in here. I'm sure that everyone listening to this understands, but I'm not sure that every Christian understands this, that the sacred history that Paul refers to when he says all these things happened to them as in samples for those living the end of the world. Some probably think that it's just the righteous history of the Jews that is used to illustrate the end of the world, but it isn't. Most of their history was unrighteousness. Therefore, when it comes to 1888, in spite of what all the historians in Adventism would have you believe, 1888 was a manifestation of rebellion by Adventism, blatant rebellion. Sister White was so frustrated with the rebellion going on there that she decided she was leaving, and the angel, her angel, told her she had to stay and record it because they were repeating the history of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. 1888 was a waymark of rebellion in Adventism. And in that very same year, Senator Blair began introducing a series of laws called the Blair Bill. But he had more than one that went over a few years. But the first one arrived in 1888, and it was a push for a national day of rest. So it was the introduction of a Sunday law. And in previous articles, we pointed out that the time that Jesus references the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet is found in three of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And one of the references, Jesus says, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, compassed by armies. Another one, it says, where you see the abomination standing where it ought not. And the other one is standing in the holy place. So you have three options for the fulfillment of the abomination of desolation that Jesus spoke about. And one is when Jerusalem was compassed with army, and that army, that was fulfilled by Cestius in the year 66. The other was when he's standing in the holy place, and that was the papacy in 538. That was the warning of 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 that Paul provided for Christians of his time period. That warning began in his day and age. In the passage in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, he says, "For the mystery of iniquity doth already work." And then the third reference to the abomination of desolation that Jesus made was when it is standing where it ought not. And that was fulfilled in 1888. The Congress of the United States was not to be the place where Sunday legislation was introduced. It was a symbol of Rome, and it was where it ought not to be. Whether those three references in Matthew, Mark, and Luke are something to argue about how I'm applying them, I'm not going to do. But we're dealing with the abomination of desolation, and I'm claiming that in 1888, the Blair Bill in that year was the sign for Seventh-day Adventists to flee the cities. And years ago, there was an Adventist pastor up in the Northwest. I almost can remember his name. I met him a couple times. It's not popping in my name, but he did a very, his name's not popping in my head. He did a good presentation on analyzing Ellen White's writings, where he showed that leading up to 1888, every time Sister White spoke about country living, she put it in the context, in the near future, we're going to have to move in the country. But after 1888, she always put it in the past tense. We're already supposed to be living in the country. So 1888 was the year that Adventists were to move out of the cities. But 1888 was a waymark that was recorded for those that are living at the end of the world. And 1888 is, Sister White plainly says, the angel of Revelation 18 descended in 1888. So 1888 typifies 9/11. So 9/11 brings all the prophetic characteristics of 1888 together at 9/11. And therefore, the Patriot Act, which is an attack upon the Constitution, as is the Sunday law, the Patriot Act is the is what was typified by the Blair Bill back in 1888. But I'm probably going to cover all these thoughts as we read through, so I'll keep reading so I don't get filled with redundancy in this presentation. As with Cestius in the year 66, the Blair Bill was providentially withdrawn. 1888 typifies September 11, 2001, for Sister White marks the descent of the angel of Revelation 18 in both histories. The warning to flee the cities for the last days became in force on September 11, 2001. Therefore, the Blair Bill of 1888 typified the Patriot Act of 2001. And a friend was sharing with me, this isn't something that I had been reading up on, but they've been reading up on it, and there's a logic to it. Trump is openly saying when he gets elected, it's going to be the greatest deportation of human history. The onslaught of illegal immigration is done with, and all the secrecy, the sinister, underhanded work of Obama and Biden, the Democrats, in regard to this flood of illegal immigration, part of the secrecy is not totally a secret, we've all heard about this, is that they're bankrolling these illegal immigrants and filling up the hotels in the cities with illegal immigrants, which is, you could have to put them somewhere. And so the hotels are making a bunch of money off the deal. They're not going to complain about it. But what happens when Trump comes into office and he says, hey, we're not paying no hotel bills for illegal immigrants. We're going to round them up and send them home. What happens, and this is just theory, but it's consistent with the idea that after 9/11, we ought not to be in the cities, because what happens in the cities when you have a population of illegal immigrants in the thousands in a city that suddenly is not getting any money, nor do they no longer have any place to stay. The logic there seems pretty clear that we should be living in the country in this history. The warning to flee the cities for the last days became enforced on September 11, 2001. Therefore, the Blair Bill of 1888 typified the Patriot Act of 2001. The angel who descended on September 11, 2001 proclaims the final warning message in the first three verses of Revelation 18. And the final warning message is also the third angel's message, even though the message represented by the third angel in chapter 14 is not the same expression of truth as in chapter 18. Line upon line, they are the same warning message. The abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet was a sign given by Christ that identified when his people were to flee for their protection. It is a warning message, and therefore must be the final warning message, though it is expressed with different words than the message represented in chapter 14 and 18 of Revelation. The history that begins in verse 16 of Jeremiah 15 is the same prophetic period of the warning testing message. It begins when Jeremiah eats God's word, and that occurs when the angel descends, as he did when the great buildings of New York City came down. When Jeremiah proclaims, "Thy words were found, and I did eat them, and thy word was unto me the joy and rejoicing in my heart," he represents Daniel's first test upon diet in chapter 1, and John in chapter 10, taking the book out of the angel's hand and eating it. The eating of the message begins when an angel arrives, and when the angel arrives, there is a testing prophecy that is unsealed. When that angel arrives, the first testing period begins, and it ends when the second testing period begins. When Michael stands up, the second testing period ends. When the angel arrives, the latter rain begins to fall. The latter rain is a fall upon the people of God. A mighty angel is to come down from heaven, and the whole earth is to be lightened with his glory. So in 9/11, you have the Patriot Act that has been typified by the Blair Bill. That can be understood to be the warning of the abomination of desolation spoken of Daniel the prophet, and God's people need to get out of the city quickly. Don't look back. At that time, the latter rain begins to fall, and at that time, the final warning message, whether it's the first three verses of Revelation 18 or the third angel of Revelation 14, or any warning message is typified in scriptures, meets its perfect fulfillment in the last days in this time period. The latter rain is received by those who walk in Jeremiah's old path. Thus saith the Lord, stand ye in the ways and see, and ask for the old path, where is the good way, and walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk therein. Also I set watchmen over you, saying, hearken to the sound of the trumpet. But they said, we will not hearken. Jeremiah 6, 16 and 17. The trumpet, the watchman sound, is the Laodicean message that Jones and Wagner presented in 1888. Cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgressions and the house of Jacob their sins. Isaiah 58:1. So 1888, which is typifying 9/11, is also the arrival of the Laodicean message. It's the warning of the abomination of desolation to get out of the cities. And it is the Patriot Act that changes the theory of law in the United States from English law to Roman law. On September 11, 2001, the sealing of the 144,000 began. A warning message to Laodicea was proclaimed. The message given us by A.T. Jones and E.J. Wagner is the message of God to the Laodicean church. And woe be unto anyone who professes to believe the truth and yet does not reflect to others the God-given rays. The warning of Laodicea is the sound of Jeremiah's watchman's trumpet that the Laodicean Seventh-day Adventist Church refuses to hear. It is the warning to flee the cities for country property in advance of the soon coming Sunday law. What I just stated concerning these various prophetic lines was an attempt to stimulate your discernment and an attempt to encourage you to truly test what I'm about to write. Perhaps the most important characteristic of the image to and of the beast is that there are two formations of an image of and to the beast in the last days, the first in the United States and thereafter in the nations of the world. There are certain prophetic characteristics associated with the image to and of the beast that are required to rightly apply if we are to navigate through the prophetic testing process of this image of Rome. A second important element of the testing period of the image of the beast is that it can be shown in several witnesses that the sealing time of the 144,000 occurs in the period of the image of the beast test in the United States, and that the period of the image of the beast test in the nations of the world is when God's other children who are still in Babylon at the time of the Sunday law, represented by 321, are gathered into the fold. That was a long sentence, and I had to add it the year 321 because in the articles I've already established that there was two Sunday laws in past history, Constantine's Sunday law in 321 and then the Papal Sunday law in 538, and they're typifying two Sunday laws at the end of the world. The first one, Constantine's Sunday law of 321, it typifies the Sunday law in the United States. The Sunday law of 538 is typifying the Sunday law where the last of all the nations of the world bow to Rome. The image of the beast represents two specific interconnected periods of testing time, and those two testing times also represent the final gathering of the 144,000 in Revelation chapter 7, followed by the great multitude in the very same chapter. 144,000 are gathered in the image of the beast testing time in the United States. The great multitude are gathered in the image of the beast testing time in the world. At the Sunday law, the United States speaks as a dragon in verse 11 of chapter 13. It then goes forth to deceive all the nations of the world, saying to those nations that they should also make a worldwide image to the beast as the United States just did. The period that begins at the Sunday law, represented by Constantine's Sunday law 321, ends with the final nation bows to Papal Rome, where the Sunday law 538 is represented. For in chapter 13, the United States has the power to bring the image of the beast to life and cause it to speak. The period begins with the Sunday law 321, and it ends with the Sunday law of 538. In 2001, the government of the United States spoke the Patriot Act into law. There are many, even of those engaged in this movement for Sunday enforcement, who are blinded to the results which will follow this action. They do not see that they are striking directly against religious liberty. There are many who have never understood the claims of the Bible Sabbath and the false foundation upon which the Sunday institution rests. Any movement in favor of religious legislation is really an act of concession to the papacy, which for so many ages has steadily warred against liberty of conscience. And I'm saying that the Patriot Act, the legislation of the Patriot Act, is an act of concession to the papacy. It may not on the surface for a worldly person appear to be so, but we're held accountable to a different level of life, and we know where this nation and this world is heading, and these attacks upon the Constitution of the United States as we approach the Sunday law are movements, they're religious legislation that is really an act of concession to the papacy. Sunday observance owes its existence as a so-called Christian institution to the mystery of iniquity, and its enforcement will be a virtual recognition of the principles which are the very cornerstone of Romanism. When our nation shall so abjure the principles of its government as to enact a Sunday law, Protestantism will in this act join hands with popery. It will be nothing else than giving life to the tyranny which has so long been eagerly watching its opportunity to spring into active despotism. 1888 to provide 2001, and it was then that the Blair Bill was introduced, though its failure to be passed prevented it from prophetically speaking. It became the sign of 66 AD, a seed that was initiated and then mysteriously withdrawn. when it is understood that there are two images of the beast testing periods, and the second period begins with the Sunday law in the United States typified by the year 21, and that the period ends when the world Sunday law typified by 538 is fully in force, then it demands prophetically that the beginning of the first image of the beast testing period also begin with some type of typification of the Sunday law being spoken. In 1888, the Blair Bill was an attempt to enforce the national Sunday law, and 1888 identifies when the angel of Revelation 18 descends and lightens the earth with his glory. The Patriot Act is the typification of the Sunday law that begins the image of the beast testing time in the United States. The United States speaks as the dragon in fulfillment of Revelation chapter 13, verse 11, when it enforces the Sunday law. When it enforces that law, it will speak as the dragon, and the Sunday law identifies that the image of the beast is fully formed in the United States. And that Sunday law identifies that the image of the beast is fully formed in the United States. At that point, the United States has filled the cup of its probationary time, and national apostasy is followed by national ruin. At that point, the United States ceases to be the sixth kingdom of Bible prophecy as the threefold union is established. Alpha and Omega always portrays the end with the beginning, and at the beginning of the United States, there were three times the United States prophetically spoke that marked the beginning of the United States as the sixth kingdom of Bible prophecy. The Declaration of Independence in 1776, followed by the Constitution of, that should say of, it says if, of 1789, and then the Alien and Sedition Act of 1798 identified the first three times the United States prophetically spoke. Each of those three publications represents the speaking of the United States. Those three steps led to 1798, the beginning of the United States reigning as the sixth kingdom of Bible prophecy. Those three same three waymarks in the beginning of the United States represent three waymarks that lead to the ending of the United States reigning as the sixth kingdom of Bible prophecy. The Patriot Act is the first of the three times the United States speaks as it comes to its conclusion as the sixth kingdom. The third speaking that I have identified as the end of the sixth kingdom is the Sunday law. In the middle of that history, the Pelosi trials of January 6, 2022 were initiated. The trials were a direct rejection of the rights enshrined in the Constitution, as the trials were political in nature, and the lawfare was not simply a fabrication of facts, but it was actually a direct attack upon procedural and substantive law as identified within the Constitution. And here's where our study begins. Procedural and substantive law. Okay? The Patriot Act in 2001 was a direct attack upon the Due Process Clause, which appears in both the 5th and 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. These provide that nobody may be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. That was 2001. And in 2022, the attack against the Constitution was focused upon procedural due process and substantive due process. The word repudiate means to deny, and Sister White identifies as the Sunday law in the United States, every principle of the Constitution will be repudiated. By the decree enforcing the institution of the papacy in violation of the law of God, our nation will fully disconnect herself fully from righteousness. When Protestantism shall stretch her hand across the gulf to grasp the hand of the Roman power, when she shall reach over the abyss to clasp the hand of spiritualism, when under the influence of this threefold union, our country shall repudiate every principle of its constitution as a Protestant and Republican government, and shall make provision for the propagation of papal falsehoods and delusions, then we may know that the time has come for the marvelous working of Satan and that the end is near. As the approach of the Roman armies was a sign of the disciples of the impending destruction of Jerusalem, so may this apostasy be a sign to us that the limits of God's forbearance is reached, that the measure of our nation's iniquity is full, and that the angel of mercy is about to take her flight, never to return. The people of God will then be plunged into those scenes of affliction and distress which the prophecies describe as the time of Jacob's trouble. The cries of the faithful persecuted ones ascend to heaven, and as the blood of Abel cried from the ground, there are voices also crying from martyrs' graves, from the sepulchres of the sea, from the mountain caverns, from convent vaults. How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood upon them that dwell upon the earth? The Lord is doing his work. All heaven is astir. The judge of all earth is soon to arise and vindicate his insulted authority. The mark of deliverance will be set upon the men who keep God's commandments, who revere his law, and who refuse the mark of the beast or of his image. God has revealed what is to take place in these last days, that his people may be prepared to stand against the tempest of opposition and wrath. Those who have been warned of the events before them are not to set in calm expectation of the coming storm, comforting themselves that the Lord will shelter his faithful ones in the day of trouble. We are to be as men waiting for their Lord, not in idle expectancy, but in earnest work with unwavering faith. There's no time now to allow our minds to be engrossed with things of minor importance. While men are sleeping, Satan is actively arranging matters so that the Lord's people may not have mercy or justice. The Sunday movement is now making its way in darkness. The leaders are concealing the true issue, and many who unite in the movement do not themselves see whether this undercurrent is tending. Its professions are mild and apparently Christian, but when it shall speak, it will reveal the spirit of the dragon. It is our duty to do all in our power to avert the threat and danger. We should endeavor to disarm prejudice by placing ourselves in the proper light before the people. We should bring before them the real question at issue, thus interposing the most effectual protest against measures to restrict liberty of conscience. We should search the scriptures and be able to give a reason that give the reason for our faith, that the prophet, the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Sister White aligns the Sunday law with several last day waymarks, and in so doing, her words reveal what is to take place in the last days, that his people may be prepared against the tempest of opposition and wrath. Therefore, the waymarks that she aligns in this passage are to be carefully examined. I'm suggesting the point of reference is the line of prophecy that focuses upon the Constitution of the United States, along with the speaking of the nation as an interrelated symbol. By that, I mean that the Blair Bill in 1888, the Patriot Act in 2001, and the political prosecutions that were carried out by the Democrats and globalist Republicans beginning in 2022 were a direct denial of two essential elements of the Constitution. 1888 represents enforcement of Sunday worship, and then in 2001, the change from English law to Roman law. In 2022, substantive and procedural law was attacked. Substantive law defines the rights and obligations of individuals and organizations, while procedural law outlines the process for resolving disputes and enforcing the rights and obligations of individuals and organizations. Substantive law refers to the body of law that outlines the rights and obligations of individuals and organizations. The law defines legal or illegal behavior and sets out the punishment for it. Substantive law covers many legal areas, including criminal, civil, and contract law. Criminal law is an excellent example of substantive law. Criminal law defines what actions are considered criminal and the penalties for those crimes. Civil law, however, governs disputes between individuals and organizations, such as breach of contract, personal injury, or property disputes. Substantive law is typically written in statutes, regulations, and case law. Statutes are laws passed by legislative bodies such as national parliaments or state legislatures, and regulations and rules and procedures created by administrative agencies. Case law is the law that judges create through their interpretation of statutes, regulations, and the Constitution. Procedural law refers to the rules governing the legal process. It outlines how cases move through the legal system from the initial filing of a complaint to the final resolution. Procedural law covers various legal areas, including civil, criminal, and administrative procedures. The purpose of procedural law is to ensure that the legal process is fair and efficient. It provides a framework for resolving disputes and ensures that everyone involved in the legal process, including judges, lawyers, litigants, know what is expected of them. Substantive and procedural law are intended to work together to ensure justice is served. Substantive law defines the rights and obligations of individuals and organizations, while procedural law outlines the process for resolving disputes and enforcing those rights and obligations. In other words, substantive law defines legal or illegal behavior and the consequences of illegal behavior, while procedural law outlines how those legal issues are resolved. In 2001, the Patriot Act removed the right of habeas corpus. Habeas corpus is a Latin term that translates to, "You shall have the body." It refers to a legal principle that protects individuals from unlawful detention by requiring a court to examine the lawfulness of a person's imprisonment. Habeas corpus is a fundamental right in many legal systems, especially those influenced by English common law. It ensures that a person cannot be held in custody without just cause and allows them to challenge the legality of their detention before a judge. Most people, after 9/11, probably most American citizens, I mean, a great majority of them, it's good they're taking these terrorists and throwing them in Guantanamo Bay. We don't care if they have any habeas corpus protection or due process. It's all good because of what they just did on 9/11. Little did people know that that was going to open the floodgates for the political lawfare that the Democrats were to open up once they were stirred up by the richest president. So, continuing on, a due process clause appears in both the 5th and the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. These provide that nobody may be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Courts have developed two branches of due process doctrine, procedural due process and substantive due process. In 2001, with the Patriot Act, habeas corpus was removed as a right, and English law was replaced by Roman law. English law defines that a person is considered innocent until proven guilty, and Roman law identifies that a person is considered guilty until proven innocent. In the Pelosi trials of 2022, both procedural and substantive due process was trampled upon. Both substantive law and procedural law were applied in the Pelosi trials in exact opposite of their intended constitutional purpose. The distinction between substantive due process and procedural due process lies in the different aspects of laws and rights that each concept protects within the framework of the U.S. Constitution, particularly under the due process clauses of the 5th and 14th Amendments. Substantive due process is concerned with the fundamental rights and liberties that governments cannot infringe upon, regardless of the procedure used. It protects certain rights from government interference, even if the proper procedures are followed. Substantive due process involves the rights that are deemed fundamental, such as the right to privacy, the right to marry, and the right to raise one's children, all things that are now under full-scale attack. Privacy is essentially gone. Marriage went another direction. You can marry anyone. You can probably marry an animal now. And the right to raise one's children, they're stealing people's children now so they can take them and have them get gender changed, okay? So it's all under attack. we're watching it before our very eyes, back to the paragraph. These rights are protected from government intrusion, supposedly, unless there is a compelling state interest. It serves as a check on the government's power, ensuring that laws and regulations do not violate fundamental liberties. Procedural due process is concerned with the procedures that the government must follow before it deprives an individual of life, liberty, or property. It ensures that individuals receive fair and impartial treatment through proper legal processes. Procedural due process requires the government to follow certain steps or procedures, such as providing notice, a fair hearing, and an opportunity to be heard before depriving someone of their rights. It emphasizes the methods by which laws are enforced, ensuring the government acts in a just and fair manner. The lawfare that has been manifested since the Pelosi trials began represents a denial of both substantive and procedural due process. The fundamental rights of American citizens were openly and successfully denied. The false flag operations and the open corruption of the alphabet agencies of the United States has been regularly exposed since even before the Pelosi trials began. But the legal procedures that have been employed by the globalists of both parties since the Pelosi trials began represents a clear illustration of the destruction of procedural due process. Earlier in the article, we read any movement in favor of religious legislation is really an act of concession to the papacy, which for so many ages has steadily warred against the liberty of conscience. Sunday observance owes its existence to the so-called Pinch Institution, the mystery of iniquity, and its enforcement will be a virtual recognition of the principles which are the very cornerstone of Romanism. When our nation shall so abjure the principles of its government as to enact the Sunday law of Protestantism within this act, join hands with popery, it will be nothing else than giving life to the tyranny which has so long been eagerly watching its opportunity to spring again into active despotism. In the line of history that can be represented with the Constitution of the United States, there are three specific waymarks representing some element of the Constitution in both the beginning and the ending of the United States. Each of those three waymarks are political actions and therefore symbolize the speaking of the United States. The third of those three marks in the beginning, that marked 1798, was the Alien and Sedition Acts. And the third of those waymarks at the ending is when the United States enforces the Sunday law and speaks as a dragon in fulfillment of Revelation chapter 13, verse 11. The prophetic history of the United States begins when, as represented by the earth, it opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood of the dragon's persecution. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of a flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. In 1776, the beast that was to arise from the earth and ultimately become the sixth kingdom of Bible prophecy in 1798 swallowed up the flood of persecution against God's people by establishing a nation with a constitution that protested against the tyrants of European royalty and the tyrants of the papal church. The Declaration of Independence in 1776 typified the Patriot Act of 2001. The Constitution of 1789 typified the Pelosi trials of 2022. The Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 typified the Sunday law in the United States. The pronouncement of independence by the American patriots in 1776 represented the announcement of the loss of independence with the Patriot Act of 2001. The Constitution of 1798 represents the Pelosi trials beginning in 2022. The Alien and Sedition Act represents the Sunday law. The history of the repudiation of every principle of the Constitution represents the progressive overturning of the Constitution that ends at the Sunday law. These lines all align in the hidden history of verse 40 of Daniel chapter 11. In this article, we quoted four paragraphs from Testimonies, volume 5, page 451, 452. We will look closer at these paragraphs in the next article, and the next article isn't on this ending note. So that's, I should have left that part off. What the point I want to bring forth is when you get to the hidden history of verse 40 and the dynamics that take place between the Republican horn and the Protestant horn, and you look at the struggles of the Democratic and Republican Party in the line of the Republican horn, and they're coming together as church and state at the end of that, their history, you find this chipping away of the Constitution. And the Pelosi trials in that line, if someone was, to me, if there was a weak link in what I'm teaching, and I don't think it's weak at all, I think it's valid and it's strong, but if there's one that would appear weak, is for me to pull these trials of 2022 out of the air and tag them with the Pelosi trials. Maybe it should have been the Schiff trials, the Pelosi-Schiff trials, however you want to name it, but you all know what I'm speaking about. And the reason I'm saying that might be the weaker link is, of all this prophetic scenario that we've been studying out in these articles, is because when it comes to the Democratic Party and the Republican Party and that line of history, the Pelosi trials at the Waymark becomes the beginning of the end of the Democratic Party, and we're watching that. You're watching that before your very eyes. If you have the faith to see it, they're collapsing on every hand. I mean, it still amazes me, even though it's been over a week now, that the symbol of the Democratic Party when I was growing up was the Kennedys, okay? Even after JFK and RFK were assassinated, you still had Edward Kennedy in Congress. He may have been, you know, intoxicated most of the time, but the Kennedys were still there getting away with murder because they were the premier political movement of the Democratic Party at that time period. And here we are. The Democratic Party is collapsing because it's the dragon power, and the dragon is given to the beast, and the United States can form an image of the beast. Therefore, the dragon power in that scenario collapses, and it's doing so. And in this very time period, what used to be the family that represented the Democratic Party comes and joins with Trump. I mean, the fracturing that's going on in the Democratic Party about whether they're going to support the Jews or they're going to support Hamas and the radical Islamists, it's dividing them every which way. And other than them really pulling off a tremendous cheat, Trump's going to be the next president. And so at the Pelosi trials, when you're looking at the horn of the Republican Party, and in that horn's prophetic history, you see both the Democratic and Republican Party. The Democratic Party began first. The Republican Party begins as the anti-slavery party leading up to the Civil War. So they began second in the history of the United States. And the Democratic Party comes to its end before the Republican Party, and it's coming to its end right now in a couple months at this next election. It's all over for the Democratic Party. And when you track the waymarks of the end of the Democratic Party and the end of the Republican Party, though closely related, they have different waymarks. And by that, I mean the from 9/11 to the end of the Democratic Party is the Patriot Act until the Alien and Sedition Acts are repeated. But not so for the Republican Party, because the Alien and Sedition Act is simply the act that begins the final setting up of the image of the beast, and it ends at the Sunday law. So when you look at the Democratic line and you deal with the Pelosi trials as a waymark, it's the second waymark. The first for the Democratic Party, the first was 9/11 and the Pelosi trials. And the third and final waymark is the Alien and Sedition Acts that are repeated, that were passed in 1798 when Trump begins to implement his work. And that's the end of the Democratic Party, whereas the end of the Republican Party, it begins in 9/11, its second waymark would be the Pelosi trials, but it doesn't end until the Sunday law. So if there's any thing that needs to be really searched out well in this scenario, this hidden history, when it comes to the horns of Republicanism and Protestantism and the variables that are presented in the two parties in the Republican horn and the foolish and wise virgins in the Protestant horn, the Pelosi trial is one of them. And what I'm saying is many people probably don't think very much, see very much significance that English law was set aside at 9/11 with the Patriot Act. And those very same people may not see anything significant about due process being set aside in 2022, but it was. There was no following of procedure on how to arrest and gather up these people that they've thrown in prison for over 3 years now. There was the procedure that was used to accomplish that was outside of the Constitution. So the procedural due process was thrown out, and the so-called laws that these people broke, perhaps some of them trespassed, but who in the United States has got more than a small fine for trespassing in the past 100 years? The substantive due process was also thrown out, which means when the focus is finally brought upon the Sabbath keepers, who are also at that time that the focus is brought upon them being accused as the troublers of the people, the ones that are causing all the problems that are about to take place. The idea that habeas corpus in 9/11 and the due process clause, substantive and procedural, were removed in 2022 is informing anyone that wants to be informed that the kind of court that you're going to be brought into to give your witness is not a kind of court that is in any way going to be upholding the basic rights of the Constitution. And those rights have been removed, and they've been removed in agreement with the prophetic word. And so that was the point that I thought maybe I would have the mental energy to put into the mix today. I've done that. I'll end here with a prayer, and then if you want to have some questions about this presentation or particularly about due process, I'm definitely not a legal scholar, but I think I got the basics down on this. Let's close with a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we are amazed that the principles of the Constitution are so widely discarded in this country today, and we see that it's just advanced work for what's about to happen to your people as Sunday becomes the focus of the issue. We ask that this information would better strengthen us, better edify us, that we can be among those that give a faithful witness in this coming crisis. And we thank you for the Sabbath day, the time that we have to come together and study. In Jesus' name, amen.
I would like to also, Steve or whoever's moderating, I'd like to ask the first question, please. because I'm going to go to my house when he starts this.
Go ahead.
Question. My question is, this is a reference from Grok. If you don't know what it is, that's fine. Doesn't matter. It says, the prosecution of individuals involved in the January 6, 2021 Capitol riot began shortly after the event. Federal prosecutors filed the first cases of rioters on January 7, 2021. So my question is why do you keep saying 2022?
Oh, well, right. My answer is because that's when they actually began the trial.
Yeah, but this marks the inception of what has become the largest criminal investigation of the FBI and DOJ history. That would be January of 2021.
Well, okay. When I Googled it to get my point of reference, I Googled when did they actually start taking people to court? And if I recall,
it was January 7th, 2021, was the first indictments. Anyways.
Yeah, but an indictment doesn't get you to court. Indictment, I think, you're indicted. Now you got a chance, if the Constitution would work, you got a chance to go get your attorney, prepare your case, and they set a court date. But I don't care. I'm not even helping with 2021. If that's correct, it's correct, and we'll make a correction on it. Maybe my distinction about when the trials begin isn't valid, but it's still the same thing. We're talking the same issue.
That's why I asked.
Okay, I didn't answer that very well, but another question?
Morning, Jeff. This is Larry Lesher.
Hi.
I just had a question. When you were talking about 2001 and the repudiation of the Constitution, you associated that with the United States reaching its hand across the chasm or the Gulf to clasp hands with the papacy. And you associated that to 2001 with the introduction of I'm drawing a blank now.
Patriot Act.
Thank you. Yes. That's what I was trying to draw to mind. I was also under the impression that that also took place in 1989 when Reagan clasped hands with John Paul II to take down the Soviet Union. Is that not also when they clasped hands? Is there a distinction between the two, I guess, is what I'm asking. Like what?
Well, yeah, the threefold union is put in place at the Sunday Law in the United States. And there's at least two places where Sister White, referring to the Sunday Law in the United States, talks about the United States taking the hand of Rome and the hand of the dragon, both. All three of them joined together there. That's
right.
Also in verse 15 of Daniel 11, but that's a different story. So if Reagan, who is the first president of this history that is typifying the final history, Reagan's typifying Trump, the idea that he was grasping hand with the papacy in that time period, that's just a typification of the end at the beginning, because the light that's unsealed at the time of the end in 1989 reaches its conclusion at the Sunday Law. So Jesus illustrates the end from the beginning. I had never latched on to the idea that Reagan joining hand with the papacy was typifying the threefold union at the Sunday Law, but it's valid observation. I don't know if I answered your question or not. I don't think the threefold union was in 1989, if that's what you're saying.
No, maybe it was just my own thought and I never had mentioned it or said anything about it. I just assumed that it was obvious that Reagan clearly clasped hands with John Paul. And so I would just assume the beginning of the process, like you said, the beginning and the ending. So I just, that was, yeah, that was sufficient. Thank you.
There is when I first started the public ministry, there was a lot of people in Advent self-supporting ministry that were out teaching similar things, prophetic things, and there were certain things we all coveted. You know, you had to have the same teaching tools. And one of the things that everyone coveted was a newspaper from the Bakersfield, California newspaper, whatever it was called, I don't remember now. And it had a big picture of Uncle Sam reaching across the water and grasping hands with the Pope, you know. And so everyone wanted that. So when they were hitting that point in their prophetic presentations, they could show this picture. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about here today. But what ended up, the reason I'm telling this, I ended up with an original Bakersfield newspaper. I have it in color. But yeah, there was some joining hands back then, but it was a typification of the Sunday law, as I would understand it. Just as in verse 15 of Daniel 11, when you understand that Peniam and that whole history there, that there's two alliances that are formed, one with what's his name, not Antiochus, Antiochus and Philip of Macedon. He forms an alliance with a Greek, which is the world, with the dragon. And then when Peniam gets its name changed to Caesarea Philippi, it carries with it the alliance between Rome and a subservient of Rome, the United States being the subservient of Rome, who at that same period of time in Peniam has formed an alliance with the United Nations, Philip of Macedon, and with Rome. So there's the inference of that threefold union even before verse 16 of the Sunday law. They've come together philosophically or whatever, politically, before the actual Sunday law.
Yeah. And then lastly, I believe it was Dave Westbrook, who is the gentleman who did the Out of Cities messages you were trying to remember.
Yep, that's him.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. The first court case that actually took place was February 2022. But the indictments began the 7th. Even that would tell anyone that has any kind of honesty in their heart, they had to be prepared before January 6th. To be flooding the floodgate of indictments the day after it happened. That was such a setup. It's just amazing. But anyway,
what do you think about what happened with Pelosi when her daughter released that documentary and it shows her in the car taking credit for everything that happened?
I don't know about that. I haven't heard about that.
Okay, yeah, there's. Her daughter was filming a documentary the day that it happened, and she is sitting in a car while they're driving, and she's saying what a mistake she made and how it's all her fault. And her daughter released the documentary with that footage in it. So I was just curious.
That's where she gives testimony that she's the one that prevented the National Guard from going?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And she's accusing Trump a failure for inviting the National Guard to come in.
Yes.
What a hypocrite.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. Okay, well, I'm going to sign off then.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. God bless.
Thank you, Brother Jeff.